Studio 360.
How are you here right now? What are you doing here?
Look at you all, Hollywood. I gotta get like...
Oh, you're Hollywood. You got to drop another album, do another movie.
You know how I roll, you know. Coming up.
Yeah, you a big shot now.
That's Demetrius Shipp Jr. as Tupac Shakur and Cat Graham as his real-life friend Jada Pinkett in the new biopic All Eyes on Me. A depiction of that friendship, by the way, which Jada Pinkett Smith has just said is wrong and, quote, deeply hurtful. Anyhow, the movie tells the story of Tupac's life from childhood to his murder at age 25 in 1996. Tupac's family was active in the Black Panther movement, including his mother and uncle. He grew up poor and then suddenly became a best-selling rap star just as rap became commercially big time. And after a prison term, was murdered in Las Vegas under circumstances that remain murky. But it isn't just how and why Tupac died that are a mystery. Who he was in life is an even more complicated mystery. Our Studio 360 producer Daniel Guimet has the story, which contains bits that might not be suitable for very young listeners.
I believe it was his 21st birthday. And we were all coming back from San Francisco in a limousine.
Danielle Smith was riding in that limo with her friend Tupac, who had only recently gone from obscurity to stardom.
There were two girls that got into the limousine with us, and they were white. And at a certain point on the bridge, they just realized they were going to Oakland, which I guess Oakland has the reputation for being somewhat rough and wild, and they went into a mild panic. And Tupac let him have it.
Tupac started yelling at the two women.
Let's just say he basically called them out on their privilege with a lot of profanity. I thought they were going to just want to get out of the limousine and stand on a corner and wait on a cab. I don't know. But the power of Tupac as a rising star at that time was such that he was immediately forgiven for saying some of the most heinous things. And they stayed with him and spent the night. It was a lesson for me in superstardom. It was a big lesson for me.
In that moment, Danielle was suddenly seeing her friend through the eyes of other people. People who admired him for his music or his fame or who they wanted him to be. There wasn't just the Tupac she knew anymore. There were now new versions of him that other people were starting to make up.
And it's like the hook goes, something we all adore. It's the one thing worth dying for. Nothing but pain, stuck in this game, searching for fortune and fame. It's so basic that we all want to be famous and noticed and watched, and we all want money and riches, and we all want the finest out of life.
Danielle first met Tupac way before he had all that. Before he could afford a limo, and before she went on to become the editor of major publications like Vibe magazine. This was in 1990, when he was just 19 and she was 22.
What I remember most about him at that time is that he never had any money at all. I remember him not having very stylish clothes. I remember him trying to put money together to go to the barber and honestly cooking a lot of food for him back in those times.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Tupac was then a roadie for the group Digital Underground, and Danielle was dating the group's tour manager. It was through him that she became close with Tupac.
You could be jumping fences with this fool. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a different time. Like
what, sneaking into pools or what?
Yeah, man, like just going in the back doors and stuff and just having the best time doing it.
Eventually, someone in Digital Underground noticed that their roadie could do more than set up the stage.
Tupac, go ahead and rock this.
Now I clown around when I hang around with the underground. Girls used to frown, say I'm down when I come around. Gas me, and when they pass me, they used to diss me. Harass me, but now they ask me if they can kiss me.
Things now start happening quickly. In 1991, Tupac is cast in a movie called Juice to play a murderous teenager named Roland Bishop.
We run from the cops. We run from security guards. Like I'm on the goddamn track team. I'm serious.
Tupac also started recording as a solo artist. And what he rapped about was really different from the stuff he wrote for his old group. He was writing songs about things like his friends in prison and police harassment and gender politics.
He had a strong desire to tell stories about what was going on in the poorest neighborhoods of the different cities that he'd lived in. I know they like to beat you down a lot. When you come around the block, brothers clown a lot. But please don't cry, dry
your eyes, never let up. Forgive, but don't forget, girl, keep your head up. I listened to your album, mm-hmm. read all the press on you, and I thought, this is an angry young man.
I'm a human being, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And I go through smiles, tears, laughter, all that. You know, I'm a Gemini too, which makes it even that much more complicated, so I can flip any second. But you, relatively, if I'm happy, everybody's happy.
I remember being at my grandma's house. My grandma had cable at the time. And I remember being on her bed, watching the I Get Around video, and just wishing that guy was chasing me around the pool. Or, you know, there's this part where he's on a tennis court and he's like hugging on this girl. And
Shireen Marisol Meraji co-hosts the podcast Code Switch. And the video that made her love Tupac is a classic rap video, by which I mean there's a mansion and women in bikinis. It's not the socially conscious side of Tupac. All respect to those who break their neck
to keep their hopes in check, as though they sweat a brother majorly. I was like, oh, I love that guy. Like, for me, the goofy, fun-loving, charming Tupac. And I know that this is contradictory because, like, in I Get Around, he calls women hoes, like, a million times. That's not funny. But for me, the high school me, there was something relatable about him. He was goofy and fun-loving. He had a million-dollar smile. He was super charming.
Shakur, recently arrested in Atlanta following the shooting of two off-duty policemen, was arrested and jailed in New York City early Friday morning.
Over the course of 1993, Tupac was accused of trying to hit somebody with a baseball bat for shooting at two off-duty cops during a traffic altercation, and then in November of that year, of sexual assault.
According to police, the rapper met a woman on Thursday night and took her back to his hotel room. There, police charge, he allegedly called in three friends who tied the woman up and then assaulted her sexually.
I was asked to go down and cover the trial, and I said, I'm recusing myself because I don't believe that it's, I do not believe that it's true.
The specific allegation was that he forced the woman to have sex with his friends, which he denied.
I don't know that it's not true. I don't know that it is true. I'm talking about what I believe, and there's a difference. But I don't know if he was the person that I knew in that moment.
No matter what happens, innocent or guilty, my life is ruined. All that you want to hear is that he's guilty, he's in jail, the reign of terror is over, the outlaw is gone. That's what they want to do. So I'm starting to think I don't know which story to read. I don't know if this is...
And he'd be, you know, outside the courthouse, you know, opining on his meaning and how he was being wronged. And, you know, this is just the government trying to bring him down and... It was, I mean, it definitely felt epic as you were going through it.
That's the journalist and critic who simply goes by Torre. He covered Tupac's trial for The Village Voice. And the way he saw it, Tupac was presenting himself as a kind of martyr.
Why are they doing this to you?
What they think is that I represent lawlessness and the outlaw mentality, and I represent that thug mentality from the street. So they feel like if they can punish me, then it'll punish people who are not as brave as I am, who don't speak out against things like me, who not scared to walk through the streets with no bodyguards.
I reached out to the woman who accused Tupac of assault. She didn't respond to any of my calls or messages or letters, but I did get a hold of some of the transcripts from the trial, and this is a bit of her victim impact statement.
Since the night of November 18th, 1993, I have lost sleep, I have had nightmares, and I live in constant fear. I am still trying to regain control over my life. My entire value structure has been turned inside out. This man who I admired, of someone who has been able to make something of his life, and whose songs talk about keep your head up, addressed to black women, is obviously not what he appeared to be. I was starstruck and in awe of the celebrity, and he took advantage of his stardom and used it to abuse me and betray me. He finished his fun and can continue on with his life.
One thing I want to ask you is, what stood out to you about the victim? Like, do you remember her in any way, or do you remember what stood out to you about her?
I mean, she is definitely lost to me. And I think that part of that comes from my youth. At the time I was covering it, I was focused on Pac. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't really give sufficient attention to her. I laid all my spotlight on him.
Yeah, it bothers me that her history, her story has kind of been erased from all this.
Shireen told me she didn't pay much attention to the trial at the time.
I really loved his music as a fan, and I wanted him to be who I wanted him to be.
Just 2 days before the jury's decision, three armed men entered a recording studio where Tupac was.
They ordered him to the floor. Tupac resisted. He was shot numerous times, at least twice in the head, once in the left arm, once in the thigh, once in the groin area.
Just to be clear, Tupac survives this. And 36 hours later, he's convicted on one of the charges, first-degree sexual assault. This is for touching his accuser without consent. Tupac was then sentenced up to 4.5 years in prison.
I felt terrible. He was such a defiant individual. Defiant about bullshit, like past assault. So to imagine someone like that having to deal with that type of authority on a 24-hour-a-day basis really was enough to give me nightmares.
When I remember Tupac sitting there in a white T-shirt and, you know, he's smoking cigarettes because he's very nervous.
Journalist Kevin Powell was the first to interview Tupac at Rikers, and he noticed right away how shaken up Tupac was.
And he kept saying a phrase that we had to actually edit out of the interview because he kept saying it over and over again between sentences, wooty-woo, wooty-woo, wooty-woo. That's the way he talked.
Actually going to prison made him seem tougher and stronger and bigger, and in the sort of backward way that a lot of us look at it, makes him, you know, a real man and authentic. And at the same time, you know, a victim because, you know, the man has got him and he's going to prison.
You know, in certain communities, there's also a thirst, a hunger for heroes and someone who is taken down by the system, by something that they feel has been hurting them or oppressing them. That person becomes a hero.
Tupac appealed his conviction and, pending that appeal, was able to get out on bail in October of 1995. Suge Knight, who was the head of Death Row Records, posted the bond in exchange for Tupac signing to his L.A.-based label.
So that propels him into this sort of last era of, like, him with Suge and Snoop and Dre and being on Death Row and being on the biggest, baddest gang in all of hip-hop.
I ain't got no motherfucker. So I fucked your bitch, you fat motherfucker. Westside, bad boy killers.
Hit Him Up was huge. Hit Him Up was the moment where I was like, who the fuck does he think he is?
First of all, fuck your bitch in the clique you claim. West Side, when we ride, come equipped with game. You claim to be a player, but I fucked your wife. We bust on bad boys, niggas fuck for life.
Charlamagne Tha God, who co-hosts the Breakfast Club radio show, was a teenager when the song Hit Him Up came out. Unsurprisingly, this song made already existing tensions between East and West Coast rappers a lot worse. The song attacks Biggie and Puff Daddy and basically all of East Coast rap.
Like, it sounded like the craziest shit I ever heard in my life. That's why I fucked your bitch, you fat motherfucker. You know what? That was the moment. That was the moment when I absolutely, positively started paying attention to Pac and was really on some, like, I was really thinking, like, yo, this dude is either really crazy or really does not give a fuck.
You know, see, grab your blocks when you see Tupac. Call the cops when you see Tupac.
And I want to be in the future known as somebody talking about me like, you know, look, remember when he was real bad? Remember when Tupac was real bad? You know what I mean? They do that about a lot of actors now. Like John Travolta, I read stories, it's like, remember you were wild? And all these other people, and now they like their sweethearts. We all should get that chance. I just want my chance.
Y'all rolling? At this time, the wounds are life-threatening, but serious, not in critical condition at this time. And the person, as you are already aware, who was the passenger in this vehicle is a known rap performer by the name of Tupac Shakur. The driver, we haven't released his name yet.
I was at my homeboy Jarrell Garnett's house. God bless the dead.
Drell got shot and killed too. But yeah, it was Friday night. It was Friday the 13th. And damn, I remember that. It was Friday the 13th.
Gangster rap singer Tupac Shakur died tonight in a Las Vegas hospital. The controversial MTV award winner who sold millions of records was on life support for the last 6 days after he was shot up in a drive-by ambush.
And I just remember like, damn, like I had to sit down for a moment. Like when you got a rapper at that height of the game, like he was that big, that larger than life, and he just passed away. That was like, wow. Like I didn't know that could happen.
I definitely remember not being surprised.
Again, Shireen Matasal Meraji.
For me, the myth started after his death. I think that he was a very real, relatable, flawed human. And after he died, he became this bigger-than-life person.
Like, me personally, I remember people liking Pac, but I don't remember Pac being on nobody's top 10 list until after he died. It's like that's when you become immortal. Like, people can remember hip-hop before Pac's death, and they remember hip-hop after Pac's death. Like, he's kind of like the Jesus of hip-hop, so to speak.
In every album, if you go backwards and you listen to the other albums I've put out, it was a prophecy. And all I'm talking about is going to jail and getting shot. So it was a prophecy. I mean, I don't have to say I'm keeping it real. You can listen to the music and go, whoa, he said that. If I die tonight, he said that. If I die tonight.
If I die tonight. From age 19 to his death at 25, Danielle Smith watched her friend Tupac come to represent a lot of things. A year after he died, Danielle herself wrote a big "What Does Tupac Mean?" kind of essay, saying he made thuggery as resistance appealing, urged us to be loud and wild and reckless. He was not trying to rise above the way things are. But 20 years later, Danielle is no longer interested in talking about what her friend means.
And if there's anything I can say too is that he was a real human being, as is made super clear by the fact that he was shot down the street and killed. He is not, to me, a superstar that was killed at the height of his fame. He is a person that I knew who was murdered.
When was the last time you saw him?
He was in a car going down 6th Avenue in New York City. It was right near Radio City. No one in New York City calls me Danny, actually. Everyone calls me Danielle because that is my professional name. But everyone in California calls me Danny. And I was standing there and I heard somebody say, "Yo, Danny," going down the street. And he was hanging out the window of a car and he yelled my name out. And that was honestly the last time that I saw him alive. So,
That piece was produced by Studio 360's Daniel Guimet. Thanks to Alexandra Farr, who read from the court transcript.